Ladies and gentlemen, if I could have your attention, we want to get started. You know, it's a hot day and there's a lot going on. We want to thank you for coming out to show your support for the RFS and for Rural America. My name is Mike Adams. I'm host of the nationally syndicated radio program AgriTalk. Very happy to serve as your MC here today for a very important event as we try to get our message heard at EPA. They didn't get it the first time, so we're going to try to get it through to them this time that they've missed the mark on this RFS proposal. So with your help, we can get this message across. Thank you for being here. We're going to start our program off today with members of the Kentucky FFA delegation. Would you please stand as they lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. You may be seated. You know, one thing that came very clear today in talking with EPA officials and talking with members of the renewable fuels industry, there's a real disconnect here. And EPA is seeing things and spinning things in a direction totally opposite of what's best for the renewable fuels industry and for rural America. So that makes this vitally important that we get the message out to EPA and try to get them to hear us. We have some outstanding leaders with us that are supporters of the renewable fuels industry and of rural America, and we're very happy to have them make time in their schedule to be with us today. Our first speaker I want to welcome is a man who's a tireless worker for agriculture in the state of Iowa and really throughout the nation. Would you please welcome Iowa's Ag Secretary, Bill Northern.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you all for spending time here today to deliver a very, very important message. And certainly, Mike, thanks for all your inclusion of the RFS issue on AgriTalk and making sure that sometimes some of the non-farmers out there as well that listen can hear how important this is. And you're delivering the message of how important this is over at the hearing and by being here. So thank you all for being a part of it. I know I've seen lots of folks that have been a part of this industry for a long, long time. Some of you have been 5 or 10 years a part of it. Some of you 15, 20 years a part of it. Some of us all have been working on this industry 30 or 40 years. You know, we've had lots and lots of challenges through those times. We had Clean Air Act amendments, I think, when Big Oil thought they had killed ethanol. When the tax credits went away, we realized we were ready to stand on our own. And again, they thought they'd killed ethanol. And there were several steps like that. This is one of those important times again. And what always happened, through the years is people rallied, delivered a message. It eventually got heard, and it made a huge difference. And we need to keep doing that. And you all are doing that. Let's make sure that folks back home realize that, get our comments in, and certainly there's no excuse for EPA to walk away and say they didn't hear what rural America felt about renewable fuels for ethanol and biodiesel and how important the RFS was and how they missed this target. Thank you. You know, y'all have done exactly what this country asked us to do. You made investments. We innovated to the point where that tax credit could go away, and we're still producing ethanol cheaper than the price of gasoline. Even after oil prices come down, we got ethanol E85 out there in some places selling for 75 cents or a dollar a gallon less than our gasoline prices. We've done exactly what was asked. And now we got to do it again. We got to make sure that this limitation, this wall that they're putting up, does not stand. That we knock this thing down and that we get back to the intentions of an RFS, the promise of an RFS, and we can grow this market again. So, again, thank you all for being here. You know, one of the folks that have been a part of this battle and one of the leaders in this battle for a long, long time, and certainly all of us as Iowans, and I think he is well recognized in the ethanol industry and the biodiesel industry around the country. I get the pleasure of introducing our governor, Governor Branstad. What a tremendous leader. Please stand and thank Governor Branstad for all his work for the year.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's always great to be introduced by our great Secretary of Agriculture, Bill Northey. He is a great promoter for agriculture, and I'm really proud to be with my friend and colleague, Governor Nixon from Missouri, who's also a great supporter of agriculture and renewable fuels, and his director of agriculture as well. He's a farmer from northern Missouri. So we're proud to be here together, Republicans and Democrats from the agricultural heartland of America, speaking out to the EPA, don't mess with the RFS. Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds and I met with Gina McCarthy within a month of when she became the head of the EPA at the Iowa State Fair on August 15, 2013, to talk about how important the renewable fuel standard was to the state of Iowa. On that day, the price of corn was $6 a bushel. Today, it's down in Iowa to about $3.45 a bushel, well below the cost of production. We've already seen farmland drop 15% in value, and it continues to decline. USDA is estimating a 32% reduction in farm income this year. So it's a critical time not to go back to the bad old days of the past, and I know how bad it can be because I was governor during the farm crisis of the 80s when land values dropped 63% in Iowa and we closed 38 banks. We've come a long ways. We've diversified the economy. We've added value to what we produce, and I'm really proud to be the governor now of the number one ethanol producing state, the number one biodiesel producing state, and the highest percentage of our electricity generated by wind energy than any other state. And we're proud of the progress we made, and we don't want to go back. You know, big oil likes to put out a lot of misinformation. In 2012, when we had that nationwide drought and corn prices temporarily went way up, they said, oh, it's the price of corn that's driven up the price of food. And the price of corn dropped from over $8 a bushel now to $3.45. What's happened to the price of food? It's gone up, not down. You're exactly right. So the truth of the matter is, just as they told the big lie about MTBE, it's better than ethanol. Use it. And what did they do? We didn't. We were smart enough in the Midwest. We used ethanol. East Coast and the West Coast were bamboozled by big oil. They used MTBE, and what happened? They polluted their groundwater. And then the environmentalists in California went nuts. They couldn't believe it. And that's when, finally, we got the RFS. And the RFS gave us a path to a renewable future. The Congress did something good for a change. And it's worked. Look at the progress we've made. Look what it's done for farm income. Look what it's done for good jobs. Look what it's done to reduce our dependency on foreign oil. And what it's done to improve the environment. Now is not the time to turn back. Now is not the time to reverse the progress. We need to follow the law. We know we can produce it. And frankly, the only thing that's preventing the availability on the East Coast and the West Coast is the monopoly that big oil has on the distribution system. I can't imagine. As we came down, and of course, I'm proud to say that as governor, I said, we want a big fleet of E85 vehicles. So the vehicle we drove down here in today is an E85 vehicle. Pretty much all of our state vehicles are flexible fuel vehicles. And we filled up in southern Iowa for $1.99 today. And I looked at that same station, what's the price of regular gas? $2.95. Now, I would bet if you're in California and went to buy gas today, and I was out there a few months ago, you're looking at $3.50 and $4 a gallon. Can you imagine if they could buy fuel for $1.99 like we can here? You would, that's the, if the consumers and the coast knew the truth about the opportunities that they're missing out on because big oil is blocking access to this great renewable fuel that reduces our dependency on foreign oil and protects the environment, there would be no doubt. We've got to do our part. We've got to educate the EPA. We've got to educate the consumers throughout America. I just want to say thanks for coming. This is a great rally, a great turnout. I love agriculture. I love the honor of serving as governor of this state, and I'm proud to work with a great colleague from Missouri, Governor Nixon, and together, as leaders of this Renewable Fuels Coalition and the governors, we want to do all we can to get your message across. Thank you for being here and showing your support for the Renewable Fuels Standard.
Thank you, Governor. I think the problem in Washington is they're not used to the legislation working, and the RFS was working, so they thought they had to go in there and mess with it somehow. We're trying to tell them to leave it alone. Next up, we're very happy to have with us the Missouri Director of Agriculture. Please welcome Richard Fordyce.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning. It's great to be here today with so many agricultural enthusiasts, folks supporting the RFS. This is a great turnout. The hearing, I so appreciated the EPA. Governor Nixon said it just a minute ago, but it would have been better if it had been in Missouri, but this is really close. And so we're really glad to be here and be a part of the hearing. You know, as Director of Agriculture and a farmer from northern Missouri, I recognize firsthand the benefits of biofuels. Reduced gasoline prices for consumers, decreased reliance on foreign oil, and increased confidence where it belongs in America's energy supply. Since biofuels burn cooler and cleaner, reduce smog and carbon monoxide emissions, and they improve the air quality. Nationally, Missouri ranks 6th in soybeans and 7th in corn. And it's those quality feedstocks grown and cultivated by our country's fine farmers that provide the baseline ingredient for our biofuels. Today, I have the honor of introducing someone who understands the great strengths and successes of agriculture in our state. From day one, Governor Nixon has been committed to putting the needs of Missouri farm families first. Whether it be an opportunity to grow the beef, hog, or corn industry or expand exports, our governor understands the importance of this industry and what it takes to move the needle for agriculture. As vice chair of the Governor's Biofuels Coalition, he has worked with his colleagues to launch an aggressive national advanced biofuels research program. And as evidenced today with his testimony in the hearing earlier this morning, he continues to fight for the passage of an RFS that will keep Missouri's and America's renewable fuels industry thriving. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Missouri's Governor, Governor Jay Nixon.
Thank you, and it's great to see this great crowd. Incredibly honored to have the leader of these issues in our country, Governor Branstad, with us today. He's been so much help to not only me, but other folks around the country. I cannot begin to explain how important he is. Also, this is one of those fearful times as a politician. Because as you, I was speaking in Hannibal, Missouri, about a year and a half ago, and there was a bank clock right across from where I was speaking. And you looked out, and it said 5 till 12. And I started talking, and you know, politicians, we can get going sometimes. I mean, there's not like we may be governors, but there's not really a speed governor sometimes on how long we talk. So I went on through noon, and I finished about 5 after. I thought I had 15 or 20 minutes of thing to say, and I was very disciplined in getting it done in 10 minutes. But when you read the paper the next day and it said the governor came and made a speech and started in the morning and didn't end until the afternoon,
you get a little concerned about kind of trying to keep the message tight right around once you've had that done to you once. So you can rest well assured my message is going to be clear and short. It is not necessary to explain to anybody here the importance of the facts of why you're here. You know that, or you wouldn't be here. You all know what's at stake. That a few numbers moved around, meaning thousands of jobs gone, the environment in a worse place, a market bamboozled, difficulty to get investment, and consumers paying more for something that they use each and every day in their lives. And those are not good things. But the uniqueness about this for everybody here, certainly we think that they ought to hit the RFS targets, and we know we can deliver. But it is really kind of fun to come and lecture the EPA about following the law. They spend a heck of a lot of time pointing their finger not only at states, but at every one of you, telling you what to do. All day long. Do this, do that, follow this. Some arcane rule sitting in some book somewhere that they have 75 hearings in front of 14 Senate committees or whatever, and they tell you, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this. All we're asking, very simply, is when this country saw a crisis, and that crisis was not only a fuel crisis, it was a foreign policy crisis. We were being drug around by folks in other parts of the world for something we needed to use each and every day to get to and from work and church and everything we did, the fuel that moves us forward. And we didn't have control over our own destiny. So the country, 20 years ago, we had a national discussion about this. And then in 2005, passed congressional action to say the farmers are going to do their part. They're going to join the risk. They're going to join the responsibility. And then you go 10 years after that to 2015, and where are we? A minimum of 10% of everything that's out there doesn't come from countries away from here, and the only foreign policy they got to deal with is us. So, it's not about whether we're right or wrong. We're right. It's not about whether or not the EPA should follow the law. They should. It's about showing the power of what we got here. Okay? So, that's why it's so important for everybody to be here, but it's incredibly important to follow up. Because while there are some really nice-looking people here, extremely comfortably dressed, we are facing a lobby of sharkskin suit people walking the halls in D.C. That's who we're tussling with. And so I'm not asking everybody to put a tie on like me or get dressed up, but you got to be heard. We got to force amplify. We do that, we can win. I mean, this is one that can be won, too, guys. I mean, and the numbers we're dealing with here, being thousands of jobs across America, fuel prices lower in a better environment, and more investment in a growing biofuels industry. Okay, growing. Okay, really important. The science of 2005 is not the same as the science today, and in order to get the investments we need to continue to get into cellulosic, to continue to make sure we're efficient, to continue to make sure we're getting secondary uses for things, all of that requires a tremendous amount of investment and constant guarantee of where we're going to be. So, I ask you all to continue to press with us, not only here, but back home, to push everybody as best you can. This needs to be done for America. We go backwards, people lose jobs, crops will lose value, land will lose value, and America will become less independent when it comes to something that every American uses each and every day. We did our part. Now it's time for our government to follow the law that we passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor Nixon. You know, you stop and think about it. It takes a lot of arrogance and a lot of nerve for a government agency to tell a group of people, an industry that started from nothing, and build an industry that now supplies 10% of our fuel supply and lessens our dependence on foreign oil, telling them, telling you, you can't meet the standards that are in that law. What kind of arrogance does that take? We got to tell them, yes, we can. Look what we've done. Get out of our way. We can do even more. One of the people leading that message one of the real leaders of this industry. We're very happy to have with us the CEO of Growth Energy. Please welcome Tom Bias.
Thank you, Mike. And thanks to Governor Branstad for telling EPA the Iowa way, and Governor Nixon for the attitude of "We're in Missouri, show me." I think it's really important, the voice. Give them another round of applause. They did fantastic today. And of course, the commissioners of agriculture from both Iowa and Missouri. And you know, it takes a team to do any of this stuff. And I want to thank everyone who came down here today to express your opinion to EPA. We have to keep in mind, this is a proposed rule. It isn't over yet. And the more they hear the real story from real Americans, you know, I've been in Washington for 30 years, and anybody from the federal government or works out there that comes out here and tells you they have all the answers to your problems, hold on to your wallet and your watch, because the real solutions rely with the people who live here, work here, and are involved in the industry, and that's you. And my hat's off to each and every one of you. You know, it's interesting to see our opposition has T-shirts on as well as ours. They're not as good looking, a little different color. But on the front it says, "Get the government out of our gas tank." I told API's representative this morning, I agree. Let's eliminate all those oil tax breaks that they get to the tune of $5 billion a year. They also had a couple signs, "Food, not fuel." Well, you know, I've been in Washington a long time, and in that 30 years, I've heard a lot of big whoppers, a lot of big outright lies, but none any bigger than that. The only thing we do in the corn ethanol industry is we take out the starch. All the good stuff, the food, or the protein, fiber, and oils returned in the distiller's grains. And for once and for all, it's time these people understand we don't make ethanol out of sweet corn, canned corn, popcorn, or caramel corn. And of course, we're all here to tell EPA, if they're serious about cleaner air, less greenhouse gas emissions, reducing our dependence on foreign oil, creating jobs right here in the United States that can't be outsourced, cheaper fuel at the pump, help our entire economy on national security, energy security, environmental security, then they need to take a page from what Ronald Reagan said to Mikhail Gorbachev almost 30 years ago. And that was, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." We're saying here today, EPA, tear down this blend wall. And just so I show my bipartisanship, I quote the Republican president. Now I want to paraphrase the Democrat president. Every one of us here, Mr. President, we're fired up and we're ready to go. Tell EPA to change this flawed rule and we'll make it happen. Thank you.
We are fortunate in this industry to have so many great leaders that are both successful in the industry as well as successful in being out as spokespeople for renewable fuels. Our next speaker very much fits those roles. Randy Doyle, CEO of Alcor and Clean Fuel and chairman of the Renewable Fuels Association. Randy?
First of all, I want to thank all of you for coming out. Your voice matters. You're here to make EPA listen, if they can do that, if they can unplug their ears. But your voice matters. And I'm so doggone proud of all of you. I'm telling you, what a wonderful industry and business to be in. You know, I started out in this business as a dumb kid from New Mexico wearing a blue jacket, wondering if I was going to be able to do anything in agriculture. And today, I'm a part of an industry that has a huge impact on all of our rural economies. I'm so proud of the work that all of you have done that came from individuals being able to, and willing to risk and invest and do what they thought Congress was asking them to do. The last piece of really true bipartisan legislation that we had was RFS. Senators and congressmen, Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives, they all got together and figured out what was best for the U.S. Now we need EPA to listen and do what they said. That's all we're asking. Thank you so much for what you do. Thanks for the innovation that you bring to your farms, to your businesses. We're doing the same thing in our industry. When people talk about first generation ethanol, I get a little bit hot under the collar, not just because it's warm today, but because we've changed so much. They wouldn't recognize what we do today. The efficiencies that we produce and what's called conventional ethanol is off the charts, and we've not stopped. It's so much fun to be a part of a dynamic industry that continues to grow, and we're looking for that continued place. Let's, as Tom so eloquently said, tell EPA to tear down that dadgum blend wall. It doesn't exist. It doesn't belong. We know that our vehicles can use more. We just need everybody to wake up to it. That's what you're doing today. Thank you very much.
We need good spokespeople at all levels. Certainly state government is very key in the ongoing development of our industry, and it's very important. We're glad to have, when we see farmers in our state legislatures, we're very happy to welcome a farmer and Nebraska State Senator, Kurt Friesen. Kurt?
Thank you very much. You know, I thought we were supposed to be here to turn up the heat on the EPA, but I didn't think it'd have to be this warm, but I think everybody's enjoying the warm weather for a change, so. I'm Kurt Friesen. I'm from Nebraska, Henderson, Nebraska, where I'd be a fourth-generation corn farmer. I'm also a senator representing District 34 in the Nebraska unicameral. As I testified this morning, my message to the EPA was very simple. Don't mess with the RFS. I've farmed for 39 years now, 40 years, and then plus growing up, it's just been a farmer forever, and I just love my job. I've always been looking for a different one, haven't found a better one yet. But I've farmed for over 40 years, and the industry has not only created a strong and local demand by having the RFS, it's also provided our country with a renewable fuel, and it's the ethanol industry. Within a 40-mile radius of where I farm, I have 5 ethanol plants competing for my grain. As competitive as the markets are, and has brought the corn industry from below the break-even margins and back to prosperity where we had it for a number of years. And unfortunately now, through supply and demand numbers, we are going to be probably operating at a negative margin in the next couple of years, so it's more important than ever that we keep this. In my comments to the EPA, I mentioned that one of the opportunities was my daughter and son-in-law and their 3 children, who moved back from California, where he was a professor at Cal Poly, and he saw an opportunity back in Nebraska in the farm. And I was, needless to say, kind of thrilled that he brought 3 grandkids back and moved closer. So it's a generation that brings with it an entrepreneurial spirit and a willingness to grasp today's technology. And it would not be possible without the RFS. I again stress to the EPA that this would not have been possible with the ethanol industry where it's at today, and they need to return the renewable fuel volume that they initially promised us. I've also relayed to the EPA that opportunities continue to abound in the ethanol industry. Opportunities to reduce our reliance on foreign petroleum, to provide cleaner air, to provide consumers a choice, and to provide rural jobs for the next generation to return to the family farm. The EPA must stop slashing these opportunities for rural America, just as they have slashed the amounts of biofuels to be blended in our nation's fuel supply. Finally, I highlighted in a letter to the EPA Administrator McCarthy, myself and 41 of my colleagues signed a letter asking the EPA to move forward with full implementation of the RFS. The law has had a tremendous impact within my family, across Nebraska, and across this great nation. The EPA is not time to mess with the RFS, and now is the time to stand up with rural America. Thank you.
Well, let's get right down to it. Not only the rubber meeting the road, but the tank meeting the pump. Right down to the people that are selling it, providing it for motorists across the country. Please welcome Cheryl Worth, gas station owner from Wichita, Kansas. Cheryl Worth. Cheryl?
I'm kind of outnumbered gathered up here, you're probably wondering what this blonde lady's doing up here talking about ethanol, but my husband and I were blessed to be in a film, and I think it's a very important film. It's called Pump. Have any of you seen this film? Well, anyway, the filmmakers came into town for about 3 days, and they filmed us. They followed us around, and we were really happy with our storyline because our storyline was about our faith and how we feel like we're doing the Lord's work, doing what we're doing. And we were very happy that they kept that in the film for us. One thing I know that Josh Tickell, the filmmaker, said is when they called us up, and we had known them previously, he said that the people that were backing the film said, "Don't you have any women?" So I have a feeling one reason I'm in the film is because I'm a woman, but was very, very blessed to be in the film. Pump, if you've watched the film, if you haven't, it's about fuel competition, fuel choice, and energy independence. It's about ending our oil addiction. We have a fuel monopoly in our country, and we have for over 100 years. We will never be energy independent as long as we rely solely on oil as a fuel source. Until then, we are held hostage by Saudi Arabia and OPEC nations that are taking our money and setting crude pricing. We need to be following Brazil's lead. They have fuel competition, they have fuel choice, and they are energy independent. The groups behind the attacks on the RFS are using social media sites to push their agenda, and they have been very clear about their intentions. They want to get rid of the RFS and attempt to end fuel competition and fuel choice, and we can't afford to let that happen. We need to be supporting homegrown renewables. We need to be blending more ethanol into our fuel supplies, not less. Corn ethanol is the reason that we have over 17 million flex fuel vehicles on the road today. We have stations, more and more stations are installing blender pumps, and we're building infrastructure and we're making progress. We need to move forward, not back. Some of the issues that my husband and I are very big advocates of fuel choice. Some of the issues that you have as a station owner is if you're a branded station, your only options to buy E85 are from the gas companies. So basically, the gas companies are controlling the E85 pricing. They don't want it to be reasonable. They keep the prices up. The only way to put affordable E85 ethanol blends out on the street, we need blender pumps, we need to buy direct from the ethanol plants, and then we can pass our savings on to the consumers. So I just want to say I'm on social media a lot, and I take up for the ethanol industry and farmers every day. You know, you grow crops, you grow food for you grow crops for our food and energy, and you guys take risk every day, and you guys are my hero. And we're going to continue to fight this fight. God bless.
You might be wondering if it's doing any good to sit here in the heat and kind of talk among ourselves while EPA hear what we're saying. Well, I can guarantee you they are, because right over here is Chris Gremler from EPA. Chris, thanks for coming over and listening. We appreciate it. There are a lot of questions still surrounding the proposal and a lot of the numbers that move around. These are very important numbers that impact bottom line in all of this. And the guy that does a great job of breaking it all down is Jeff Cooper, Senior Vice President for the Renewable Fuels Association.
Well, thanks a lot, Mike. And I feel a little bit like this is a church meeting. You know, it's all been said, but not everybody said it. So I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about some of the numbers and going through just the tremendous impacts that this program, the RFS, has had on rural economy. And first, I'd like to thank Mr. Gremler for hosting this hearing in Kansas City. The last hearing was out in D.C. It's obviously a lot harder to get this many folks with an interest and a stake in the RFS out to D.C. So thanks again for locating the hearing here in Kansas City. But I wanted everybody to just stop for a minute and think about what you were doing 10 years ago, back in 2005, and what the world looked like then. And I think the farmers here will remember that we produced about 11.1 billion bushels of corn that year. That was the second largest crop ever. And the national average yield was 148 bushels per acre. So that wasn't bad either. So 2005 was really a remarkable year for corn production. But farmers weren't exactly jumping for joy because you had a situation where demand for corn just wasn't keeping up with the tremendous gains in productivity that we were seeing. And so you had 2 billion bushels of carryout, and you had the average corn price that year at $2 even, $2 a bushel. Think about that. And so the total value of that 11 billion bushel crop that year was $22 billion. And because of that, we saw nearly $7 billion in government payments to corn farmers in 2005. So what was happening 10 years ago in the energy markets? Well, we had record crude oil imports in 2005, about 5 billion barrels of crude oil and petroleum products being imported into this country. About half of that was coming from OPEC. We had oil prices at $60 a barrel that year, had retail gas prices averaged $2.35 a gallon. So by today's standards, that doesn't sound too bad, but I'm sure 10 years ago, we were all complaining about how high gas prices were. Governor Branstad mentioned that 10 years ago, we were using MTBE as the source of oxygen and octane in our gasoline. So the world we lived in 10 years ago had corn prices below the cost of production, rural economies faltering, and we had increasing dependence on foreign oil and rising energy prices. But something else happened in 2005. A bipartisan Congress passed the first renewable fuel standard, and 2 years later, they expanded that program with the multiple goals of reducing oil imports, introducing real competition into the fuel market, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and don't forget, adding value to agricultural commodities. So guess what? It worked. The RFS worked. To the points that have been made several times today, it's rare that anything coming out of Congress works at all, but to have something as successful as the RFS has been, I think is tremendous. We've seen domestic production of renewable fuels increase 500% in the last 10 years. We've seen oil imports fall to their lowest level since the early 1980s. We've seen greenhouse gas emissions from transportation falling dramatically. And farmers have added value to their crops and earned their income from a demand-driven marketplace, not from the government. And in fact, the last 10 years, the 10 years since the first RFS was passed, have been the most profitable, most lucrative years in the history of U.S. agriculture. So why on earth do we want to reverse the clock? Why do we want to go back to 2005? Why are we turning our back on a program that has done exactly what it was intended to do? So the bottom line here is the RFS has been the most successful energy policy this country has seen in recent memory, and the EPA officials, including Mr. Grunder, who have been patiently sitting in the Reardon Center a block away from here, need to hear that from you all. And thanks again to everyone here for showing up, telling your story to EPA, and joining us to support the renewable fuel standard. Thank you very much.
Let's get more farmer perspective now from White Cloud, Kansas, and a past president of the National Corn Growers Association. Please welcome Ken McAuliffe. Ken?
Thank you, Mike. I just think it's an amazing sight to be here on a hot day when there's a lot of work to be done in the fields and look out here and see all these people, see the big crowd over there. It's amazing to me, and I'm really proud to be standing at the stage speaking after a couple of governors and a lot of distinguished people behind me, though. I do want to recognize three other past presidents of the National Corn Growers Association. It's very special to have Secretary Bill Northey here, Chip Bowling behind me as president today, Roger Pines back here as past president, and I was president in 2007. So I was involved very heavily with the passage of the current energy bill, which includes this 15 billion gallons. And our chant at that time was 15 by 15 by 15. We'd walk into Congress office and legislative staffers would say, oh, it's the 15 by 15 guys. That really resonated. It started working, and we had reasons for it. We can produce 15 billion bushels of corn, and we can produce 15 billion bushels of ethanol from that, 15 billion gallons of ethanol from that. And I think that's a, been a huge impact on agriculture. To me, it's the most successful rural development policy that I've ever seen. It's resonated. You've all seen it going across your communities. But I think it's personal to all of us, but it's really personal to me after lobbying for that, convincing people that we could do it, showing them that we could do it, going through a short crop year and still having everything work. And we're all here today with lower prices, and now things are being threatened to slow things down. We don't need to slow them down. We can produce enough corn. We can keep prices reasonable. And today we're pretty balanced. We've got livestock in a good situation with cheaper corn. We've got the ethanol plants, you know, needing a little bit more gas prices. But we just came through a pretty good recession in the economy of the United States, that where we don't have quite the gas consumption that we had. So that's partly where we're at. But I think I want to thank all of you for being here. I think we've created a lot of jobs for our kids to come back to the farm. I know it has on mine, and I've seen a lot of other young people excited about what's coming down the road in the future. We are going to be defeated by this. It's just a setback if it happens at all. But I really, really think we all need to do our part. Speak up. Get anybody that we're talking to speak up. Retweet, repost, do all these things on social media that we know how to do. But most of all, stand up for yourself and your occupation and talk to anybody and say, no, you're not correct. This is why we need to have ethanol, not just for ourselves, but for our country. Thank you.
I have been covering this industry since the 70s, and what has happened is just miraculous. How many oil refineries have we seen built since the 70s? Next to none, right? Probably none. But you go across rural America and you'll see the ethanol plants, those biorefineries that are producing the energy, and they're developing, they're evolving, and doing more and more all the time. And representing the industry is Jeff Eastman, CEO of East Kansas Agri-Energy. Jeff?
First of all, I want to thank you all for coming to Kansas. I am from Kansas, and I only have one other representative up here. So welcome to Kansas. We appreciate y'all coming here. As many of you know, yesterday we had the honor of hosting several folks from the EPA, including Chris Grundler and his team. Very honored to have them here. It was a great opportunity to spend not 3 minutes like I'll get here in a little bit, but more like 2 hours, 2.5 hours with these guys. We spoke about how an ethanol plant is built, what it takes to have an ethanol plant in Garnett, Kansas, how long we've been working on this plant, the investors, the board members, the employees who we've received who have come back to Garnett, who we thought left. And not to mention, we spent a lot of time talking about our renewable diesel plant, this bolt-on technology that would not have been constructed or under construction now if it wasn't for our base ethanol corn plant, our corn ethanol plant. That was a message that we tried over and over again to resonate with these folks, that we're spending up to $15 million on a renewable diesel plant connected directly to our plant that would not have been built without our ethanol plant and the investment and the hard work that went into that. And so we are very, again, blessed to have them at our site. Very engaging conversation we had with them. I hope, and I say that, I hope that they heard our message and they're able to walk away with a good understanding of this market itself. So anyway, a couple comments, you know, that I had is, one of them, many of you may know, I spent 11 years in the Marine Corps, and I can tell you, I've been all over the world. I've protected embassies, I've done a lot of things, but there's one thing I'm going to tell you today, or several things actually, but when it comes to America's energy future, I'd rather do business in the Midwest than in the Middle East. Yeah. Yeah. Simplify, thank you. You know, in 2005, by adopting the RFS, Congress has, you know, given America, really, we've heard this message across this panel here, given us greater control. That's greater control over our energy, where it comes from, greater control over the choices consumers make, you know, they have at the pump, not to mention greater control over our environment. And just as importantly, The RFS has given the petroleum industry less control over America's pocketbooks, energy independence, and our environment. I don't know about you, but I do find it kind of disturbing that a government agency responsible for protecting our environment is siding with an industry responsible for oil spills, you know, across the country, adding carcinogens to our gasoline, polluting the air with toxic particulate matter, and injecting fluid into our earth. Let's tell the Environmental Protection Agency to live up to its name and actually protect the environment. When it comes to domestic renewable fuels, we don't need less. We need more. And that's exactly what the RFS passed by Congress has outlined, a message that has resonated all across y'all, and I appreciate that. The RFS has transformed America's strength in agriculture, energy security, economic vitality, thousands of new jobs, and reduced government farm subsidies, and the cleaner air and lower prices at the pump. So when you add it all up, it makes you wonder, really, why are we even here today? You know, I've asked this question back in December of 2013. Why am I here? I'm asking the same question today. Why are we even here? But honestly, fighting for what is right is a battle that never ends. And on behalf of all of us who support the renewable fuels industry, I want to thank you for your enthusiastic support and endless energy as we work together to make America even stronger and more prosperous. And we tell the EPA, don't mess with the RFS. Thank you very much.
It's been noted we have a number of past presidents of the National Corn Growers. I see Martin Barbary out there from Illinois, and the others pointed out earlier. Our current NCGA president comes all the way from Maryland to join us, Chip Boling. Chip.
Well, thank you, Mike. I haven't had lunch yet, but I did have a Mountain Dew, so look out. Again, we keep asking ourselves, why are we here today? Because the EPA has chosen to ignore the law. They've decided to change a mandate. As most of you know, I'm from Maryland. You know that big corn producer on the East Coast? We have a Chesapeake Bay mandate. Me and my fellow farmers can't choose to ignore it. I don't think that would work very well for us. So why else are we here today? Because our 42,000 dues-paying members and our 300,000 checkoff members expect us to be here. They expect us to defend what we helped create, the renewable fuel standard. Our mission is simple, to create and increase opportunities for corn growers, to build demand for corn. That's what the RF is and was doing. There's no question, the RFS has changed our dependence on, has reduced our dependence on foreign oil. It has lowered gas prices for millions of consumers and has brought economic stability to all of agriculture so our sons and daughters have a chance to come back and make a decent, honest living. When EPA announced they were going to make these changes a year and a half ago, we had 200,000 people respond to the EPA. We had 10,000 farmers write directly and call the White House. It's unheard of. That's what I love about and had the honor of being the president of National Corn Growers. We're a farmer-led, grassroots organization that stands up for what we believe in and what is important to us. And also, what else are we here today for? We're here today to tell the United States Environmental Protection Agency that American farmers can grow a clean, renewable fuel on our family farms all across this country. So why are we here today? We're here to defend the RFS because that's what we're supposed to do and that's what we are doing. Thank you guys for coming.
Well, you think you're hot, try sitting up here in a corduroy jacket like our next guest is doing. If you're still able to stand, we want to welcome Logan Korf, Missouri FFA.
Good afternoon, and first I'd like to say thanks for coming out. I'm Logan Corr from Norbert, Missouri. I'm an incoming senior in Norbert High School and member of the Norbert FFA chapter. I'm currently serving my chapter as the chapter president, and I'm the Area 2 Association second vice president. I've grown up around agriculture as I'm the third generation on my family farm, and I've been blessed with the opportunity to work with my dad and my grandpa in the production of corn and soybeans. Agriculture is the foundation in which many of my morals and values have been built on. Within the last 10 years, there have been two ethanol plants constructed near my hometown. My family has invested in these plants, and both of these plants are currently now successful and thriving in the production of ethanol. The thing is, though, is that my family didn't just wake up one day, see that there was a ethanol plant being built, and throw their money at it. They actually saw something that had a prosperous future, and they were able to invest in new markets for our products. And these plants have also provided a huge boost in our community by providing jobs and creating much-needed economic activity. Also, in 2010, ethanol was blended into 90% of the gasoline supply in this nation, which replaced more than 400 billion gallons of imported oil. I don't know about you, but I'd like to see that number go up, as well as I'd like to see that number be that big and keep this money in our nation where our citizens can benefit. There is a future for agriculture, but it must be protected. With only 2% of the population actually involved in production agriculture, keeping these alternate markets alive is essential in the survival of sustainable agriculture. My future plans are to graduate from the University of Missouri with a degree in plant science and return to the family farm. This issue has never been more evident because it will affect myself and my peers as we pursue careers in agriculture after college. I've been able to experience this issue firsthand through my SAE, or Supervised Agricultural Experience, which every FFA member is required, and really be able to see the business side of agriculture and crunch the numbers to ensure a profit. With input prices on the rise, the importance of having these markets for our products cannot be stressed enough. With ethanol as a valuable resource, agriculture in this great nation will have a bright future and have a positive impact on our economy. Thank you, and remember, don't mess with the RFS.
Want to again thank all of our speakers. Want to thank you for coming out, taking time out of your schedules. We know a lot of farmers, especially in this area, are still trying to get planting done. We appreciate the show of support. It's not over. The hearing continues on. We're going to have a march back to the convention center. I think Captain Cornelius is going to lead the way. Where's Captain? Okay, so we want you to line up behind Captain Cornelius. Hey, he's the second hottest suit there, back there. I think that's even hotter than Logan's, you know. Get behind Captain Cornelius in just a few minutes. Go ahead and start lining up. We're going to march back to the hearing and show your support for the RFS. Thank you very much.